Hi, welcome to an exploration of the lore, culture, and personalities of early jazz on Jazz Rhythm, jumping swing, classic blues, and hot jazz, old and new. I'm Dave Radlauer, bringing you the fourth in a series about Jelly Roll Morton, who had a major role in shaping early jazz. This hour, Jelly Roll Morton's intriguing Library of Congress recordings, his significance in the development of early jazz, and some tunes and tales that just didn't fit elsewhere in the series. By now, if you're already familiar with Morton, you're asking, what about his biggest hit, King Porter Stomp? Its origin dates back to 1904, when he devised it as a showpiece to knock off competitors. He named it for a piano-playing friend, Porter King, who was a formidable expert at Scott Joplin rags. Morton's creation of King Porter was part of his larger quest to develop music both more dynamic than ragtime, but more nuanced than honky-tonk and barrelhouse piano. Morton soon exceeded the limited musical ideas of his piano-playing competitors, who were mostly playing improvised showpieces based on riffs or familiar melodies. And in 1924, when Jelly Roll made this piano roll of King Porter Stomp, he was a pretty big deal in Chicago in the Midwest. Written around 1905, but not published until 1924, King Porter Stomp may be the first fully composed, written jazz tune, a fully developed 3-minute work. It's a sophisticated, multi-themed composition utilizing an array of techniques more orchestral than pianistic. Containing at least 3 major themes, it builds tension through Morton's ferociously syncopated rhythms to an abrupt change of key for a stomping finale. Equally talented as pianist, composer, bandleader, or recording artist, Jelly Roll Morton fit no existing category in the early 20s. At the peak of his popularity around 1924, 25, 26, his music publisher was still proudly billing him as a foremost composer of rags. And keep in mind that the word jazz itself was scandalous slang, not yet in wide usage, and in any case, it was soon to be displaced by the word swing. And despite what I've said about him moving beyond rags, I do still hear remnant strands of ragtime DNA audible in his music. Morton recorded King Porter Stomp several times in the mid-20s, almost always as a piano solo, either by intent or accident. And in performances like this, Morton is in a sense playing all the band parts himself on the keyboard. One of the notable exceptions to Morton's solo approach to King Porter is his fine 1924 duet, just Joe Oliver on cornet and Morton piano. Recently, Wynton Marsalis took a similar approach in his 1999 tribute to Morton, a CD which I find otherwise too modern and revisionist for my taste. Thank you. King Porter Stomp, Wynton Marsalis Trumpet with pianist Eric Lewis, and we also heard some of the Joe King Oliver and Jelly Roll Morton duet from 1924. Benny Goodman's hit recording of King Porter Stomp changed everything. Arranged by Fletcher Henderson, it was among Goodman's first big hits in 1935. It became a swing-era anthem and has been recorded hundreds of times since. One famous story has it that on one occasion, as Morton was annoying fellow musicians with his bragging, contending that everyone was playing his music, somebody turned on the radio to blot out his monologue. Ironically, on came a swing band playing King Porter Stomp. A swing classic, King Porter Stomp, it's still currently available in hundreds of recordings. Maddeningly for Morton, he received no financial benefit from his tune's swing-era popularity because he'd been cheated by his publisher, Walter Melrose, cut off from his song royalties. There have been several attempts to write words for the song. I don't know where this goofy lyric came from. It dates back to the 1950s at least. Recorded here by rockabilly singer Merrill Moore.
When they play King Porter Stomp, man, how that great band could romp. Greatest music you could hear. It's like having Mardi Gras all year. Everybody's going wild, laughing like a happy child. What a swinging marching spree. It's really something to see. Dig the beat, grab a seat, it's a treat. You will meet the elite in the street. Beat your feet in the heat.
The vocal harmony group Manhattan Transfer made an ambitious attempt to lyricize King Porter. And though based on the Goodman-Henderson rendition, they make the point of tracing its origin back to Jelly Roll and its namesake, pianist Porter King.
It's a natural want more competing. Porter, he's the king. He knows how to stomp.
Then everybody knows that
King Porter, master of how to stomp.
The absolute master of stomp. King Porter, the rollicking Raja of rock. King Porter, the blinkin'est plunk to the side of the border. Ooh, he said King Porter, who is the king of the keys? King Porter, and constantly able to please King.
Manhattan Transfer with their original lyric to what they call The Stomp of King Porter. I'm Dave Redlauer. Thanks for joining me to celebrate the life and music of Jelly Roll Morton. And still ahead this hour, his best recording of King Porter, recollections of Buddy Bolden, and a couple of Morton's ballad-like tunes. During the period between about 1904 and 1915, Morton was working to break his music free of the constricting formalism of ragtime style. And this freed him to borrow and incorporate whatever he encountered. Melodies, rhythms, and musical fragments from the world around him. Honky-tonk piano, opera and classical music, vaudeville, popular dance, and the Caribbean and Latin rhythms that so often appear in his music. Jelly Roll began to introduce the stops, instrumental breaks and unpredictable rhythm changes that became part of his signature. But then, because his ideas were overflowing the confines of his keyboard, he did something truly novel in jazz at that time. He began to write down his ideas in musical notation. So by 1914, ahead of anyone else we know, save W.C. Handy in the field of blues, Morton was developing ambitious, semi-notated compositions, fusing his notated scores with group and solo improvisation, forging a distinctly new musical form, not yet called jazz. But it was another decade before Morton found musicians fully adequate to the task of performing his music. By fusing the seemingly chaotic, improvised music of New Orleans with Western musical notation, his compositions could then be published or performed to his specifications by a small band. And by the early 20s, Morton had developed a distinct style and repertory of tunes, melodies, and techniques. He had harnessed the free-flowing, improvised vernacular American music of blues, piano professors, and New Orleans ensemble polyphony to the technology of written musical notation. He was creating original new music, fresh and distinct enough to constitute a unique personal style executed to his design by talented specialists, an achievement only equaled later by Duke Ellington, but very few others of that era. And on almost every recording, Morton was introducing some innovative new idea. For instance, his 1927 Jungle Blues is notable for its novel gong effect, but really, it's a kind of thought experiment. Essentially, he's repeating one chord, the tonic chord, incessantly, without any harmonic development, giving it an oddly unresolved, dissonant quality.
Thank you.
Wow, so relaxed, so hot and funky for 1927. The exotic Jungle Blues, based on a single chord. Jelly Roll Morton and his Red Hot Peppers. We also heard South Frisco Jazz Band, recorded by yours truly in the early 90s. This is Jazz Rhythm. I'm Dave Radlauer. Thanks for joining me for the saga of Jelly Roll Morton. Turning to the recordings of Jelly Roll that Alan Lomax made for the Library of Congress Folklore Archive in 1938, we find a remarkable body of around 5 dozen brilliant and wildly diverse performances and stories packed with rich historic detail and utterly fascinating music. For Lomax, Morton launched an opus of wide-ranging scope, playing anything he could perform without a band, though at some points pointing out what a band would do here or there. And he illuminates the styles of several forgotten or unrecorded musicians of significance, like Buddy Bolden. I should also add again as a footnote that Lomax encouraged Jelly to play the smutty so-called blues songs from his days working in the brothels. Frankly, some of the lyrics are so filthy and vile that even I find them embarrassing, and of course, we'll forego them here. That said, we find sublime musical moments and vivid historic revelations as well. And during the many weeks of recording, Morton's deeper thoughts about jazz clearly emerge. He points out that jazz music is more than a repertory of clever tunes played enthusiastically, but a technique, an adaptable method of creating music for all occasions, noting that jazz interpretation might be applied to almost any musical idea. For instance, he demonstrates Stars and Stripes Forever, played the way early New Orleans brass bands jazzed up patriotic marches. In the midst of all this singing, playing, and recollecting, Morton tries to puncture some myths and settle several controversies, to his favor, of course. For instance, at one point, he makes clear that scat singing, that is, improvising wordless syllables to a melody, predated Louis Armstrong in the 1920s. Elsewhere, Jelly Roll explains how Tiger Rag evolved from a 19th century French quadrille dance, which is interesting, but what tickles me is the lion's roar we hear in the Hold That Tiger section. Morton made it by leaning his forearm on the keys.
Hold that tiger!
And it may be reminiscent of some of his crowd-pleasing vaudeville routines from decades earlier. And yes, as a young man, Morton had tried his hand at vaudeville sketches and blackface medicine show comedy. Just imagine a lightly complected Creole blacking his face with charcoal to perform minstrel comedy. And apparently his comedic efforts fell so flat, they brought the advice from friends and associates to just stick to music. Also fascinating is Jelly describing the Dirty Dozen. The Dozens is an African-American tradition of verbal sparring, improvised, competitive insults often set to rhythm or music that still goes on today in various forms.
Yes, you did me this, you did me that, you did your father, you did your mother, you did everybody. You come to cause your mammy don't wear no drawers. That's the Dirty Dozen, all the Dirty Loving Dozen. Dirty Dozen. Yes, your mammy don't wear no drawers. Yes, played in the houses in Chicago where they didn't mind about the language.
Different Jelly Roll Morton's impression of the Dirty Dozens. He was also intent on getting several of his classics on the congressional record, as it were, like his original Jelly Roll Blues, which marked an important stage in his evolution from ragtime to jazz. Having been unrecorded for nearly a decade, Morton also used the Library of Congress sessions to memorialize some of his new and as yet unrecorded music. And he often accompanies these with choice bits of historic context, as he does in Buddy Bolden's blues.
Oh, this number is no doubt about 19-2. Well, I tell you, Buddy was the most powerful man in the history. Buddy Bolden would play sometimes at most of the rough places, for instance, the Masonic Hall on Perdita and Rampart, which is a very rough section. Sometimes he'd play on the Globe Hall, that's in the downtown section on St. Peter and St. Claude. Very, very rough place. Very often you could hear of killings on top of killings would make any difference. Many and many a time myself, I went on Saturdays and Sundays to look in the mall and see 8 and 10 men who was killed over Saturday night. It was nothing but 8 or 10 killings on Saturday night. Occasionally, Buddy Bolden used to play in the Jackson Hall, which was a much nicer hall, on the corner of Jackson Avenue and Franklin in the Garden District. Occasionally, he would play in the Lincoln Park. Anytime they could get him, that's where they'd have him. That is one of those halfway rough places. I used to go out to Lincoln Park myself when Buddy Bolden was out there because I used to like to hear him play and outblow everybody. I thought it was good myself. Anytime there was a quiet night in the Lincoln Park, a little place that I used to hang out of corner with the boys used to call it Hangout Corner.
In his youth, Morton had heard the legendary Buddy Bolden and based his Buddy Bolden blues on a well-known popular tune that was Bolden's unofficial theme song. The melody itself had probably been up and down the Mississippi River many times in the scandalous version made famous by Bolden and his men in turn-of-the-century New Orleans. Its freshly improvised on-the-spot lyrics were comical, ribald, or crudely obscene. The local police considered singing this crowd pleaser, also known as Funky Butt, a punishable offense. So Morton is referencing actual historic situations and persons. He mentions trombonist Frankie Dewson, who played for Bolden, and Judge J.J. Fogarty, who sentenced petty offenders to community service sweeping up in the marketplaces. Morton edited, slowed, and resynthesized the tune, creating one of his late crowning masterpieces. The noble simplicity and deeply historic resonance of Buddy Bolden's blues, subtitled, I Thought I Heard Buddy Bolden Say, could only have come from Jelly Roll Morton.
Thought I heard Buddy Bolden say, you're nasty, you're dirty, take it away. You're terrible, you're awful. Take it away. I thought I heard made him sad. I thought I heard Buddy Bolden's shout. Open up that window and let that bad air out. Open up that window and let the foul air out. I thought I heard Buddy Bolden sing. Thought I heard Judge Fogerty sing. 30 days in the market. Take him away. Get him a good broom to sweep with. Take him away. I thought I heard him say. Thought I heard Frankie do some shout. Yeah, give me that money. I'm gonna beat it out. I mean, give me that money like I explain you. I'm gonna beat it out, cause I thought I heard Frankie Doosan say.
We've been listening to snippets of Jelly Roll Morton's unique Library of Congress recordings, and that Bolden Blues was from one of his last commercial recordings. His later music seems to have taken on a retrospective, folkloric quality, seemingly in tune with the nascent New Orleans jazz revival and national search for musical roots, but actually Jelly wasn't really interested in all that except as it furthered his personal aims. This is the last of four programs, The Saga of Jelly Roll Morton, on jazz rhythm, jumping swing, classic blues, and hot jazz, old and new. Still ahead this hour, more of Jelly's great music from the illuminating Lomax sessions and remarkable last recordings. If you missed earlier programs in The Saga, or would like to learn more about Jelly and early jazz, come on down to the Jazz Rhythm website, www.jazzhotbigstep, that's all one word, jazzhotbigstep.com. Recapping briefly, Jelly Roll Morton was a colorful character. He was playing piano in New Orleans bordellos by his mid-teens, and after leaving New Orleans and traveling the country for nearly two decades, after 1922, he settled down a bit, first in Chicago and later New York, to record and compose prolifically. Aside from music, Morton was, at one time or another, a pool shark, gambler, bartender, and a pimp. A man of outlandish style, he dressed in the sharpest suits, carried a large money roll, and had a diamond mounted in a gold front tooth. Provocatively, Jelly Roll was always bragging about his unique accomplishments and bragged himself all the way up to, "I invented jazz and you pups don't know what you're doing." At any opportunity, he declared himself the inventor of jazz, claiming to be its earliest progenitor and greatest talent. The odd thing is that Morton's declarations cannot be called false if judged by today's best research and interpretation. His falsehood lay in denying the significant contributions of others. Here's Jelly Roll's fine-tuned State in Madison, recorded in the late 1980s by pianist Butch Thompson with Pam Pamir drums. Thank you. Pianist Butch Thompson, Jelly Roll Morton's State and Madison. This is Jazz Rhythm. I'm Dave Radlauer.